This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is an old friend, Tom Johnson, publisher of Set Aside Alert and the president of Riley and Johnson. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
There you go. You can find Tom, though. This is the important part, setasidealert.com. I get Set Aside Alert in the mail every other week. This is really a repository of great stuff, not just for small business, but primarily for small business. But anybody who's doing business with the government, this is really good stuff. Easy read, but chock full of good stuff. It's not free, but it's well worth the price. Tom, how you doing, man?
Great. Hi. How are you?
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Give us some background on you and Ann Riley and Johnson, and then let's get into Set Aside Alert.
I started in the government contracting field back in about 1978, dealing a lot at that time with GSA schedule type issues and that kind of thing, working for large companies and small companies in terms of negotiating GSA schedules, getting the offers ready, helping with contract administration, and a lot of time was really spent with market planning, how you take that schedule or any other vehicle, by the way, and find the right people and the right agencies who have a need for that product and who you need to market to. So I've worked in that field since 78. I do some individual consulting for companies that would like to get on schedule. I do market planning. I've also spent time as VP of sales for Carroll Publishing, with their organization charts and database of government officials, and with a couple other companies in between, where I actually become part of their staff for a period of time.
Okay, good. Now, Set Aside Alert. How long has this thing been cooking?
Okay, Set Aside Alert actually began publication in 1991. Another fellow who I happen to know at the time started it up, and so I worked with him a little bit at the beginning, and then it went through about 10 years of publication under his and other newsletter companies. I bought it in 2001, and at that point, we added the daily email of all new contract opportunities. We scrubbed that down so you can really see those opportunities and zip through them in about 5 minutes, but if there's something there for you, it takes you right to the solicitation. The other advantage to that daily email is that if you are looking for somebody at Fort Belvoir or Park Service in Colorado, all of a sudden you've got names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses of contract specialists. So that's the daily part. Then biweekly, the newsletter covers changes in regulations, what's coming on the Hill, newly certified companies, companies that are looking for teaming partners, usually a column by a guru in a legal or financial or marketing matter. So it really is, you know, is your total resource for small businesses in the federal market.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I enjoy it, and I use it. Any information source that keeps me current is important, and this does. Mm-hmm. The latest issue, the lead article is Federal Contracting Forecast Rocky Road Ahead. I mean, this is not news, but I think you have a slightly different spin on it. What would that be?
Well, you know, I think everybody's been talking lately that contracting is going to be cut. We were at $550 billion. We've come off of that level now. And golly, if sequestration and some of those other things come into play, we'll see a dramatically different situation there. However, I think for small business, this is not necessarily a significant problem. With small business, you tend to be more in operations and maintenance kind of projects. You're providing products. You're not always out there with the newest developmental efforts, which are the ones that are going to get cut back. We see it every time there's a continuing resolution. It's the new stuff that can't go forward because there's no funding for it. So small business, I think, is going to gain because they've become a very reliable source. The agencies and the contracting officers and the program people realize more and more that when they have a small business contractor in there, they're dealing with the CEO or the chief operating officer. They're not dealing with somebody who's a fourth level capture manager out there. They're dealing with the guy who's right there on the ground with them, anxious to solve that problem and willing to go the extra mile to finish that work.
Okay. Now, would you say that that's accurate across all agencies, or it's simply a trend that you see?
It's definitely a trend. I don't see it across all agencies. However, I see it in more and more agencies. You know, we've been doing our federal networking breakfasts about once a month for 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And our speakers at those breakfasts are the OSDBU directors, mm-hmm. typically the top person in that office. And just over the years, I can tell you, step by step, there's been elevation of the OSDBU in the source selection process.
Mm-hmm.
There have been more and more opportunities for small businesses to be involved in there. And I think every one of them is telling me that more and more of the agencies are becoming small business friendly.
Okay. So the rocky road is here. The headlines I see, the larger businesses going after smaller deals, et cetera. No news to anybody. I mean, they've been doing that for a couple of years anyway.
Yeah.
The news 5 years ago was larger businesses are going after state and local government business. The more intelligent ones had already been doing that anyway, at least for the larger states. But we have sort of an accompanying thing here that is supposed to make life simpler for small businesses. Do you know Steve Koprinz by any chance?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Just finishing reading his book, which is excellent, and I'm going to recommend it to our readers.
I would hope so, because Steve's new book is, I forget the name.
Small Business Guide to Federal Contracting.
There you go.
Got it in the car.
There you go. I have it on my desk at home, but I don't remember the names of most books anyway. But it's a really good book. Yeah. Fits in it really well with Set Aside Alert, and I believe he's doing a book signing sometime soon around here anyway. But the thing that's coming down the pike, and it was supposed to happen in May, didn't. CCR, excluded parties, a variety of government data, USA spending, blah, blah, are all supposed to merge into SAM.gov.
Right.
This was supposed to happen in May. What happened?
Well, this was probably supposed to happen 5 years ago. It just seems like this is another one of those, ongoing forever kind of situations. And frankly, it's not that hard. I don't understand. I think the problem is not so much that it's hard to do. I think the problem is that there's too many hands in the pot and too many stovepipes involved. And, we've got data sitting here, there, and everywhere. And I mean, if you look at the excluded parties list, it's not very long, right? That's not a big file.
No.
CCR has got 600,000 records in it. Well, that's a good size file, but it's, you can handle that on your laptop.
Right.
What's the difficulty here? 3 years ago, they started handing out brochures on what SAM was going to be. I don't follow.
Okay. I'm not sure who came up with a May time frame anyway, but it seemed in government parlance a little too soon. They kicked it back to July. July's in the middle of busy seasons.
Yeah, and there's no way that anything can happen at that point in the cycle anyway.
Right. I'm not sure who attached that date, but apparently they have not been on the contracting officer side or the vendor side of that equation because things get really busy. My guess is if it happens this year, it'll be in the November time frame. Is that semi-realistic?
I think you've raised an important point, if it happens.
Okay. But, there's supposed to take, like, eight different systems here, and merge
but,
them.
But initially, it's only three, right?
Initially, it's three. It's going to be staged in.
Yeah.
But that gets to another question. We, you know, if they're going to merge in USA spending, I mean, first of all, what's the difference between USA spending and FPDC?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think in terms of theoretical accessibility, the user interface on USA spending is a little prettier, and neither one of them are terribly easy to use. It's tough, even in USA spending, to make a search. I'm probably using that a little bit more than raw FPDC stuff now, but
you don't get as deep as data, do you?
Well, I think you can, yes.
Okay, I haven't yet, so.
I don't know that you, yes, I think you can. But neither one of them are simple. Neither one of them really add that much transparency to the whole situation because you've got to be an expert in how to use it in order to figure out anything. I've done a lot of searching for 30 years, and neither of these interfaces is very effective.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Tom Johnson, publisher of Set Aside Alert. You can find it at setasidealert.com. I suggest you do so. It is an excellent publication. Recent issue, I think the current issue, talks about the woman-owned set-aside program gets off to a slow start. I mean, number one, it's been a slow roll for this anyway, because Valerie Perlowitz has been pushing this since she started or co-started Women in Technology back in the early 90s.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the whole set-aside for women-owned businesses has been cooking for at least 9 years in from the standpoint of when the law was passed. Mm-hmm. And it took them that long to figure out how to implement it, and there were a couple false starts in the process there. It was implemented actually last year, and it's appropriate time to take a look now and say, where are we? So it's been a year out there. I think TSA was actually the first agency to come out with a RFP under the Woman-Owned Small Business Set-Aside program. Kevin Boshares has told us that he has told every one of the Homeland Security buying offices to do at least one woman-owned set-aside during the year. Well, you say, at least one. What does that mean? Why only one? And the reason is that most of the agencies currently are meeting their woman-owned goals. Purpose of a set-aside is to help an agency direct contracts to help it meet its goals.
Mm.
Well, if its goals already are met, that decreases the necessity of using a set-aside to go after, particular woman-owned program participants. Now, also when the program came out, We ended up with two categories of women-owned businesses, women-owned businesses and economically disadvantaged women-owned businesses. And each of those categories had a specified group of industry codes, NAICS codes,
I remember that.
So what do you got here? You got a situation where the contracting officer has to figure out how he's going to do this, right?
Who the heck came up with the idea of putting restrictive codes on this? Why, I mean, did they think that women could only do certain jobs?
Well, no, I believe if you go way back to the Aderin decision and some of those, the court said that if you were going to redress past problems, you had to do it in a focused manner. And in fact, that's what took so long for the women on set aside to get out. SBA was trying to figure out, how do we figure out how to focus it to those who are, suffering or at risk or who've been excluded. And we can talk another time about NAICS codes, but NAICS codes were used as the basis for this. So,
right.
So we ended up with
there was eight.
130 NAICS codes specified for the woman-owned program. I'm not sure I have that number quite right.
Well, eight major categories, I recall, and underneath those there was 100 and some odd.
Yeah. But so many categories are not set aside, and so women-owned businesses have no more potential for set-asides in those industries as they had before. I'll say again that since most agencies are meeting their woman-owned goals, there's no great need for them to go out and use this woman-owned set-aside to, push those programs through. So
okay. And your article on this referenced Representative Velasquez, who has her scorecard, her right. annual scorecard, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you follow more closely than
yeah.
I do.
Yeah, and the scorecard should be out any day now. Last year came out, I think, on June 24th. So
okay.
yeah, we're right there.
We're waiting.
As soon as it hits, it's going to be all kinds of gnashing of teeth because there will be X number of contracts found to be awarded to large business, which were coded as small business, and we're back into this, you know, roiling of the situation.
Right, but, you know, Velasquez has been on top of this issue for, the scorecard's been coming out over 10 years now, right?
Oh, yeah, I think so, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably more than that.
So, all right.
You know, it changes every couple of years in terms of red, green, and blue, or one,
right.
two, you know.
Yeah,
but right now we have an interesting scorecard scoring system that goes up to 150 points.
Okay. Another really interesting story to me in the current issue is defense is on track to accelerate $60 billion to right. small business.
Yeah, well, acceleration is the term being used, but what we're really seeing here is a program to pay people quicker. Okay, so normally your contract terms are net 30 days. Maybe you get a discount, 110 or something like that, which the government in the past always took, even though they never earned it. But in the meantime, what we've got now is just an effort to go from net 30 to net 15. That actually is not just defense, but it's all the, President Obama put out that policy some months ago.
Right, so. But I mean, you know, how realistic is a net 15 in this market?
I know agencies are paying it. I don't know if they're paying net 15 on date of invoice or net 15 on when the invoice was accepted. We've had that issue for a long time. You know, you deliver your goods, and is it a proper invoice that you put in with that? Well, they bounce it back two or three, four times. Wide area workflow is supposed to resolve a bunch of that in the DOD environment, and I think, in fact, wide area workflow is probably the tool that is being used to speed up these payments. But let's remember that the $60 billion is just 10 days, 15 days earlier receipt of payment. It's not new money. It's not revenue that didn't exist before. It's just that you're getting your money quicker.
Okay. Now, in the same issue, though, we have it's not just DOD, but across the board, a report about subcontractors not receiving the funds from the primes.
Well, not receiving task orders and work under a prime contract in which they had been a party to the bid.
Oh, okay. 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 Yeah.
So yeah, we have many situations where
this is new.
Where we've had teams, subcontractor teams, and that kind of thing for years now, and oftentimes they work very well. But obviously, if you're going to be part of the team, you're expected to come in and do part of the proposal, too. And
right.
proposal efforts are time-consuming, and especially with big business that has, you know, real procedures for that. You have to make a big investment. If you're doing that on a task order-based contract, you're really betting the farm because you have no idea if a task order will ever be issued for that particular service that you're providing or you're the expert at. So you got one situation where the agencies, gee, we don't need that service, so they don't get work under that. The other situation is, yeah, they need that service, and they give the task order to the prime, who does not pass it on to the sub, who spent all that time helping with the proposal. That's where the complaints are, and in this particular survey by American Express, the numbers were pretty high. There were 30 to 50%, depending on how long you'd been in business.
This was the open study?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they issued a study a couple of years ago that I really liked. I just got this one. I have not had a chance to read it thoroughly. But, you know, given that, this is not a new scenario. I get calls occasionally. I'm sure you get a lot more than I do about companies saying, well, I'm part of this team, quote, part of this team, but I don't get any work.
Yeah. And we actually did a summit on this topic last fall, the Small Business Subcontracting Summit. Significant number of small and a few mid-tier firms participated in that. And as far as that goes, we even had participation from a couple of the large primes. The questions that were raised at that summit were things like this, where, you know, you don't get the work, you find that the prime used its own people to get the work. You know, there's some really serious stories out there. Some large businesses are known to be small business friendly, and some large businesses are known not to be small business friendly. And it seems to be the same guys over and over again.
Right. Well, I've always referenced subcontracting as a spousal abuse situation where everybody's going to get abused. Some are just more egregious than others. it's not a slap at the primes. It's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that situation's ever going to change.
I don't know either. I mean, the realities of business are, let's say that you were a small business and you were the prime and you had an opportunity to put more of your people to work, you'd have to think twice about that too, you know. Unless there's really a strong niche capability that small business has, he's at risk every time around. If he's just providing bodies, he's, you know.
Well, my favorite complaint is, but they made me sign I can only
exclusive,
work with
you. Use your own legal judgment and powers, and that maybe you shouldn't have signed on in the first place.
Right. Right. You know, if they want an exclusive, it's usually they want your relationships, and they may or may not give you work.
Yep.
It is what it is. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Tom Johnson. Tom is the publisher of Set Aside Alert. You can find him at setasidealert.com. Tom, there is a... some sort of expediting that the president wants to push some sort of modular procurement thing so we can have a more agile workforce, buy things in smaller chunks. Number one, I think we've seen this before. Number two, it seems like a variation on the simplified acquisition procedures. But what exactly is it, and is it going to benefit our favorite community small biz?
Okay, I think it's a bigger than that kind of thing. It's not just simplified acquisition procedure type stuff, which is 150,000 and below. I think what we're talking about here is that we've had over the last 5-6 years. Numerous very, very, very large-scale projects that fell very, very, very flat on their faces. NMCI and SBINet being perhaps the two poster children in that regard. Agencies for years have gone out and tried to do everything in one fell swoop, which generally meant 10 years and lots of money. I recall, actually, I was working on a system design project at GSA back in the early 70s, we had 150 people, I think, working on the project in 72. It was ultimately implemented in 1981. So these big projects take forever, and by the time they roll out are already obsolete. I think what we're talking about here in modular procurement is, you know, bite-sized pieces of this. You don't have to rebuild the whole system. You need to rebuild the accounts payable part, or you rebuild the inventory control part, and then you add the other pieces around it. when you do that, you are enabling procurement to be made in smaller chunks, meaning lower prices, meaning smaller contracts, meaning more capability for small business to be viable bidders. I think that's a great thing. I think the opportunities here for small business are going to increase dramatically. Once again, small business can show its expertise and ability without having to cover the whole world and bringing in teaming members from all over the place. They can bid these jobs on their own or with one or two real good subs and get the work, and maybe it's a $5 million or $10 million or $15 million job, not necessarily $150,000.
Right. Okay, good. but, you know, it would seem to me also then that you could almost make some of these set-aside opportunities.
Oh, because, absolutely.
Yeah,
because, you know, there are many, many, many small businesses that are capable of doing $5, $10, $15, $20 million jobs. Yes, we look at the small business size standards, and in the case of IT, it's $25.5 million. But that's annual revenue on a three-year average for a company. Mm-hmm. And so many of these contracts come out as two- or three-year contracts. You know, talking $20 million over 3 years, that's easy to do. I worked with a small business here in Rockville bidding on one of the Weather Service's NOAA-Link contracts a couple years ago. The NOAA-Link program is a 10-year, $2 billion program. There were 10 small business set-aside contracts under that program. Mm-hmm. So each of those small businesses was potentially eligible for $200 million over 10 years. Take that back, that's $20 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay, that's manageable.
Yeah. But all of your eggs are in one basket. So.
Well, maybe. But maybe you've also grown out over the course of time. And
sure.
That's what the program's intended to do. I do think that, you know, when you're looking at our community of small businesses now, and that's 8As and STVs and Hub Zones, as well as all the other small businesses, you've got great talent out there. You've got the ability to do super work and to do it effectively and efficiently.
Okay. Another highlight or potential highlight for small biz, Alice Lipovich, which we should point out, number one, I've done some interviews with mm-hmm. Alice before, formerly with 1105, now with Set Aside.
That's right. Yep. I'm the editor.
Great pickup. Whoa. Way to go. Way to go, Alice and Tom. But she did an interview, I believe an exclusive, with Roger Baker over VA. What's the upshot here?
Well, she did an exclusive with Roger just last week. And in that discussion, they were talking about small business and small business's role. And, of course, VA has a very important objective right now, like VA, along with the rest of government, including DOD, and that's electronic health records, one of the key items of focus these days in government IT development. So as Roger was saying, you know, what we've got here is a situation where nobody's got a real strong hold on electronic health records already. None
no.
of the big guys, yeah, all the big guys are working at it, but it hasn't gelled yet. And this is a situation where small businesses with some ingenuity and innovation can come in with some great ideas and become, you know, a significant player on the team. We've got not only VA looking at that and DOD, but obviously over in HHS with the National Coordinator for Health IT. Plenty of opportunities across that, and whoever scores big is going to score real big when this thing shakes out.
Right. If somebody comes up with an application that makes it easy for doctors to convert records, they're not going to be a small business very long.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't include something embedded under your skin, but we'll see.
Well, that would be good. I might be a little resistant there. But, I mean, you know, there's the electronic health record, the conversion of all those paper-based records is really seems to me to be the major impediment.
Certainly, yeah, that's got a lot to do with it. But I think also a major impediment these days is just the ability to communicate between the clinics, the labs, the hospitals, and the doctor's offices. When you go to your doctor, are they able to bring up the results that you know were run at the hospital when you were there 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Can they see your MRIs in their office? Do you have to carry that little folder around under your arm with those you know sheets of film in it or printouts? I was carrying a CD recently for a scan that I had. Why shouldn't people be able to readily access all of that now?
Good question. You know, it's boggled my mind for a long time. I was in to get my allergy shot the other day, and every time I go in, you know, they hand me the form, take it back, get the shot, lady yeah. writes on it. Yeah. She says, take it back to the front desk.
Yeah.
and they, please verify this information from your health provider. Go, I haven't changed in the last, you know, X number of years. Not like I'm going to change in the last 2 weeks. but I got to sign off every time. OMB, we have a new OFPP director, and I don't really want to take cheap shots, but the first memorandum that came out really made me think of Sarah Peller. Where's the beef? Issue a memorandum, consider requiring set aside for max, you know, was any of this new?
Well, I don't think it was new. I think it was, if anything, an attempt to implement the Jobs Act laws from last fall, when we really opened a new chapter here with the ability to set aside delivery orders and task orders under GSA schedules and GWACs and other multiple award contracts. Prior to this, there was no requirement nor even the capacity to have a set-aside under a GSA schedule or under a GWAC. Certain agencies had implemented small business versions of some of the GWACs, so, mm-hmm. you know, Alliant SB and First Source and Eagle and so forth have had set-aside portions of it. Now you can actually set aside on the GSA schedule an opportunity. And there again, you know, it's what's behind it, I think, is the effort to meet goals. And, you know, we've had a 23% goal for small business. Many agencies have not met that 23%. There's been discussion in Congress recently about raising that to 25%. So if there is another way to encourage more purchasing from small business, mm-hmm. set aside under the schedule ought to be a chunk of that.
All right. Let me ask you about the 25%. There are, I'm not sure how many bills on Capitol Hill regarding small businesses right now, but
There were six a few weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. I thought there was like 50, yeah. Considering all of the hubbub around them. But do any of them have teeth?
Teeth or a life?
Either at this point. Yeah, why go from 23 to 25 if we're not meeting 23?
That's a very good question. I mean, set a higher goal, maybe even work harder to get there.
Right.
You know, if I were a hurdle runner, I guess I could comment further on that. But what I'm concerned about, and it really struck me a few months ago when I realized that, you know, during a legislative session, there are thousands of bills. Mm. And during legislative session, how many actually become law? Very few.
Right.
So there's a lot of effort out there that goes into raising the issue or discussing options, but the likelihood of most of them getting to the floor and ultimately becoming law is fairly slim. So, I don't know that any of these have great likelihood of passage.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Tom Johnson. Tom is the publisher of Set Aside Alert. You can find Tom and Set Aside Alert at setasidealert.com. Couldn't be much simpler than that. We I'm going to migrate back to OMB kind of, but the Mythbusters 1 and 2, we've had some discussions off air about this, but Mythbusters 1 was why and how contracting officers should talk to industry. I have not seen or heard of an uptick in communications since Mythbusters 1. Is that accurate?
Nor have I.
Okay. But you know, Was it a worthwhile effort? What's the point, and what's the upshot here?
Well, in looking back, let's first of all go back 15 years and say that back at that in that era, program officers and contracting officers were not talking to anybody. It was clear, by golly, that you got the RFP when it came out, and good luck. In the last 10 years or so, there has been, I think, a lot more attempts to put information out there and get comment back. But you recall at the beginning of the Obama administration, there was a short period of time there where OFPP was saying, don't talk. And, you know, I think that it was misdirected at the time, mm-hmm. perhaps misunderstood. But I think Mythbusters 1 was perhaps getting the word back out that it was okay to meet with industry. It was okay to, as long as you didn't get a $15 muffin, you could go out there and talk to people. Well, then the $15 muffin came along, and unfortunately for about a month and a half there, that really screwed things up.
I went to a meeting. Partial news really irritates me.
I went to a meeting where two prominent SBA executives were there to speak, and they couldn't even accept a bottle of water. They would take a cup of tap water, but not a bottle of water, because that was $1.29. And, you know, they had to fill out three forms when they got back to the office to explain, you know, what they did and why they, you know, didn't do anything wrong.
Okay.
That was overblown. So hopefully maybe Mythbusters, you know, one was an attempt to resolve that. The funny thing about Mythbusters 2 is, you know, I don't think industry has any problem about going out and talking to people. I think it's getting people to
talk back.
Yeah.
And to respond.
Know, industry days, you know, there are probably as many industry days now. Well, I'm not even sure about that. There should be a lot more of this, because that's how you get good proposals, because people are informed on where you're going, where you're at, and figuring out how they can make it better.
Oh, I heard from, I didn't hear this directly, I heard it secondhand, but you may have heard the same thing. I heard from one friend at a very public meeting that he was told by an OSDBU that he could not host industry days because they were against the FAR. Have you ever heard of
it? I have not heard that. I certainly hope that that's not floating around out there, because certainly that's the opposite.
This was only about 3 months ago.
Really?
Wow. So wow. I'm going, what? You know, who's OFPP these days?
Yeah,
what's this? So do you think there's going to be a Mythbusters 3, or should we hope not?
I'd like to see them take Mythbusters 1 and 2 and really, you know, achieve something out of
that.
Yeah, that would be great.
We don't need
a 3.
We don't need a 3. I you know, I like Adam and Jamie on TV. I don't need them on Capitol Hill.
I mean, if you've already talked to the contracting team and you've already talked to the contractors, I guess maybe Mythbusters 3 would be directed at Congress?
Okay. Well, yeah. But I don't want to talk to Congress. I don't like talking to Congress. One or two, maybe, you know, a retired Congress guy. I like talking to Davis.
He's good.
That's always good.
Yeah.
But he has a clue.
Yeah, he does.
You know, major clue.
Yeah, it was a really sad day, I think, when Tom decided to.
Well, yeah, but, you know, all good things, as they say. You know, Small Business Alert has been around now for 21 years, doing a great job. Last 10 years, obviously much better under you than previously. And now you got Alice, too. But let's get into some tips for small businesses, those coming into the market and those here still trying to, you know, gain some traction. So give me some ideas of what these companies should be doing.
Yeah,
so
okay. You know, we, as I said, we host a breakfast series usually once a month with an OSDBU director. Mm-hmm. And so we're hearing frequently from those people who are, as I said, more and more involved in source selection now and so forth, that small business needs to do a couple things to help itself. And so I have gone into TCR and the Dynamic Small Business Search myself on numerous occasions, and I have to say that small business is not doing itself any favor by ignoring its CCR and DSPS listings. So frequently, you're busy and you got to go through this rigmarole to get your password and find it again after a year or go in and make changes. Mm-hmm. But the agencies and the contracting people and the small business people use DSPS every day, every hour, to look up companies. Those companies who are out there with a full record, including some past performance and keywords in their record, are going to get selected more often or found more often just by enhancing that record. And you're asked to update it every year. Well, when you do that, just don't go in there and click update and sign off. Go in there and look at what you've got and say, is this really presenting me and my capabilities to a contract specialist who may be looking for a small business?
Right. You know, we get into this when we talk about companies differentiating themselves. If you're a technology firm and about, 20-25% of CCR is full of IT companies,
right,
if you're not continually honing your expertise and narrowing the focus to a very particular expertise that the government needs, if you just say, you know, computer security, that's a little generic.
Yeah, and so many people don't put any keywords in their listings, or they put in one or two NAICS codes. Now, unfortunately, there are other people who put in 30 or 40 NAICS codes, and that's not so great either. But
I mean, I'm a telecom company.
But, I mean, you want to be sure that you're doing everything you can to be found when somebody's out there looking. And anything you can do to enhance your appearance compared to those other 25 people who are going to pop up when somebody does a search is, you know, time well spent.
Okay. Obviously. Next tip.
Okay. Next tip is you've got a capability statement. Now, lots of people say, oh, gee, I got this, you know, PowerPoint presentation. You can go to my website, et cetera, et cetera. Agency OSDBOOs want a one-sheet capability statement. You can use two sides of that, but it should be on one piece of paper, and it should be electronically able to be delivered to them. But because electronically you can do that, you can also hone it a little bit so that when you're sending it to EPA, you can talk about your special capabilities in the environmental field, whether it's IT or hazardous waste or whatever. So use that electronic version to hone each one of those submissions that you make and keep that information fresh. And once again, put some references in there. It's companies you've done work. It doesn't have to be a government agency. It could be a company you've done work for in the past. Make sure you got your contact information on the front and the back in case it gets separated.
Well, yeah, in case they print it. Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. What about dating that sheet? Because, you know, I go to government websites to get information. I can see, you know, the update 2007. Yeah. Yeehaw! Thank you so much.
Dating could be wise, but for your own reminder, but it probably won't help you a whole lot unless you are good about updating it regularly.
So
if you say on the bottom that it was updated yesterday, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. But basically what you're saying is don't show up with a folder full of stuff for the OSDBOO.
Right. Right. Who is not actually going to buy anything from you.
Well, he's not going to buy anything, and he's not going to pass along a folder.
Right. But he will email your one-page capability statement to that program official who says, geez, I can't find anybody who's capable of doing some cybersecurity niche.
Final thoughts.
I guess the last thing is market research, and that is that you want to use USA Spending, which we talked about earlier.
Right.
And you want to use the agency websites. Mm-hmm. And my favorite tool is the U.S. Government Manual, which is still available free from GPO in an electronic format now.
PDF, yep.
It tells you every agency's bureau's mission statements, organization charts, who to contact, and so forth. U.S. Government Manual. That's the thing to get.
There you go. Tom, thanks so much for coming in. Tom Johnson is the publisher of Set Aside Alert. You can find him at setasidealert.com. This is not my day job. If your company needs to ensure your marketing program is paying top dividends, give me a call. You can find me all over LinkedIn, or you can find me at federaldirect.net. Thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.